You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 409 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this fine Monday evening into Tuesday morning, and a jam-packed show for you guys today. Just me for a while, and then we will be joined by Jeremy Wu of Sports Illustrated. He is the NBA draft guru over at SI. I wanted to have him on before the draft, just kind of ran out of time there. He's a very busy man, but managed to wrangle him after the draft to talk about what the Hawks did and what they didn't do in the draft, and also a little bit of a quick look ahead to the 2019 class, where the Hawks are projected to have potentially two lottery picks, but certainly at least one probably on the docket, given the Hawks' rebuilding nature. So plenty to talk about there with Jeremy, and that interview will air at the end of the podcast. But before we get to Jeremy, though, a couple of news items to hit. Monday morning served as the introductory press conference for the three rookies, Trae Young, Kevin Huerter, and Amari Spellman. Plenty to talk about there. But the headliner for me, at least coming out of that, was that had very little to do with those guys, aside from maybe Trae Young tangentially, and that is that Michael Cunningham of the AJC caught up with Lloyd Pierce, the head coach of the Hawks, to talk about the Dennis Schroeder, Trae Young dynamic. And this quote from Pierce definitely made the rounds and was very interesting in a lot of ways. So I'm going to read it to you here when it comes to Dennis Schroeder. Quote, "I think Dennis will be a tremendous role model. We've talked about it already with him and Trae, not only coexisting, but him being a leader for Trae and helping him on the court. Dennis has had a lot of success in the league, and he's a guy that still has a lot of growing to go, and Trae is just trying to follow in those footsteps." End quote. Also, Pierce told Cunningham that he basically, I guess he just went out of his way to emphasize that Dennis is really excited about the prospects of having Trae Young around. So that definitely inspired a lot of reaction in Hawksland today when it comes to all the fan base and the talk about potentially those guys coexisting. I will say nothing for me has changed. I do think that, you know, this is something that the Hawks have to say, whether it be Trevor Schlenk talking about that after the draft in a public setting or Lloyd Pierce here to the AJC. You know, nothing necessarily changes in my mind. I do think, though, and we'll actually hit on this briefly with Jeremy Wu a little bit later on the podcast, but I think there's still an impetus for the Hawks to go out and trade Dennis Schroeder, but they may not have a ton of interest to do so, and that's something to just keep in mind there, that he actually might have to be on this roster, and if he is on the roster, trying to figure out the best way to move ahead with Schroeder and Trae Young, because the worst case scenario, in my opinion, is to not have Trae Young have the opportunity to grow, whether it be playing time or just the way that he's actually deployed on the floor. So that's something to keep in mind, and we'll talk about that plenty if Dennis is not traded between now and training camp. But that was sort of the headline quote for me from Lloyd Pierce to the AJC on Monday, so that is that. As for the introductory press conference itself, the numbers were revealed. A lot of people asking me what numbers the guys were going to wear. Trae Young will wear number 11, Kevin Huerter number 1, and Amari Spellman number 6. No huge surprise there, I guess, because, you know, Trae Young wore the Oklahoma, same number Oklahoma of number 11, so get your jerseys now if you want to go out and check those out. I think they're going to be probably on sale very, very soon. Aside from just the rookie stuff, Trevor Schlenk was asked about free agency. He said that the Hawks, quote, will not be quickly out of the gates, end quote, in free agency, despite having $20 million or so in cap space. I continue to believe that the most likely use of that cap space is to take on a bad contract from somewhere else in exchange for an asset, whether it be a draft pick or a very intriguing young player. I do think the Hawks will probably sign someone in free agency. You know, last year, famously, they signed Dwayne Dedman, they signed Ursula Ilyasova, they re-signed Mike Muscala. Like, they definitely made some attempt to bring in some veterans, and I think that might actually happen this year. But the big-ticket items, like even the young guys in restricted free agency, whether it be Aaron Gordon, Jabari Parker, Julius Randle, Dante Exum, that kind of guy, it doesn't seem like the Hawks are necessarily too excited about jumping into that market. But I guess if somebody I guess if the value just fell far enough, the Hawks could certainly jump into that later on. But Schlenk did make it seem as if he was not necessarily eager to be flying around on July 1st. That's not a huge surprise given where the team is at this point in time. Elsewhere, Kevin Huerter said that the original timetable for his injury, the torn ligaments in his shooting hand, was 6 weeks after the surgery that took place in mid-June. He actually said he re-aggravated the injury that he actually originally suffered in February during the season. He re-aggravated that in a workout in June and actually had surgery the following day and has been out since then. That was in mid-June, so it's been a couple couple weeks now. I don't think that that's necessarily a six-week timetable for him to be actually, you know, full-on ready to go play basketball. But that's 6 weeks without any basketball activity. He wanted to push that a little bit, he said, and wanted to be aggressive with it. But at the same time, no chance that he'll be playing in summer league. He's been ruled out. He talked about that, kind of laughing about how he was going to just kind of be there and enjoy things in Utah and Las Vegas. But we will not see Kevin Huerter play basketball in a competitive sphere until training camp, but it seems to be all systems go when it comes to him being ready for training camp, so that's a positive thing there. And lastly, Travis Schlick did make sure to note right off the bat that the comparisons that are out there between Amari Spellman and Draymond Green, quote, never once crossed his mind, end quote, during the draft process. This is something that I was certainly expecting him to say, but something that I've definitely echoed. The Of the three Warriors Hawks comparisons, they're just easy to draw, with Young to Curry, Huerter to Thompson, and Spellman to Green. I think Spellman to Green is probably the least reasonable, I will say. You know, Huerter to Thompson has a lot of issues, and of course Young to Curry has a lot of issues as well. But Green to Spellman doesn't really make a ton of sense. And I do think that Schlick got in front of that one in a hurry when he was talking about those guys at the early portion of the press conference. They're clearly happy with Amari Spellman, and Spellman was definitely amusing on the podium and on Monday morning, so that's something to take in mind. He seems like he's gonna be a fun personality, and all the guys did well, I will say, in front of the microphones here. But that's just sort of the quick rundown of what transpired. Full video was available from the Hawks Facebook page, which I would definitely encourage you guys, as well as the MC Bob Rathbun. The great Bob Rathbun was the MC for the festivities, and that was also on Fox Sports Go. So if you want to go back and watch that, I'm sure it is still available on those platforms. But certainly something that's always exciting to watch as a Hawks fan, I'm sure. And that is the end of that. One last thing before we get into the meat of the podcast with Jeremy Wu, and that is that Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN broke on Monday evening that Erie BayHawks head coach, that's the Hawks G League affiliate, Josh Longstaff, is quote, finalizing a deal to join Mike Budenholzer's staff with the Milwaukee Bucks, end quote. Not a huge surprise there. You know, Longstaff was brought in by Bud during his tenure, but you know, it looks like he's going to be joining Budenholzer on his staff. That means the Hawks will need a new G League head coach, which doesn't seem like the biggest deal in the world, but it's definitely something that has to be important when hiring that position, because you want to have a system that mirrors that of the one in Atlanta, and that you know, Lloyd Pierce and that person are on the same page. Longstaff's somebody who I've always heard good things about. In fact, sort of ironically, he did a podcast appearance with K.L. Chouinard this week that's probably should be interesting to listen to in retrospect now that he'll be no longer employed by the Hawks organization, it appears. So something to keep in mind there. Not a huge blow necessarily, but the Hawks will need another G League head coach, and that is something to monitor in the coming days. All right, with that said, the rest of the podcast is going to be dedicated to Jeremy Wu. So before we get to that, please subscribe to the podcast. Take a moment, leave 5-star feedback if you like the show, or leave us a comment or review, all that fun stuff. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, Spotify, and also full episodes available on PeachtreeHoops.com. Wherever you listen to podcasts, I promise we are there. And after a short break, we'll be back with Jeremy Wu. Please subscribe, do all that fun stuff, and we'll see you guys later on. Jeremy, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate you taking the time. How's it going?
Doing well, man. What's going on?
Just living the dream. Have you sort of rested a little bit since the draft? I know you are a full-fledged draft expert. I just like to play one on TV, as they say. But you are certainly all about this. So I hope you've gotten some rest a little bit since Thursday.
Yeah, you know, I took the weekend to try to unplug a little bit, but you know, stuff always pops up, and I'm already starting to think about next year a little bit, just in the preliminary stages, but thankfully, you know, the air to worry about it.
Yeah, the madness is sort of over for a little bit here. Actually, earlier today, we're recording this on Monday night, and earlier today, the Hawks introduced their 3 first-round picks, which is most of what I want to ask you about today. Kind of wanted to sort of gauge your reaction to all 3 picks. We'll start, I guess, at the bottom of the list when it comes to what was your reaction to them trading out of 34? That didn't necessarily surprise me, but with the talent available on the board, I didn't exactly love that necessarily. So what was your takeaway from the Hawks kind of getting off that pick and looking at 2 second rounders in the future?
Yeah, I had heard that they were planning to stash that pick. Like, everything I had heard going into the draft, you know, I had a couple different names come up for that spot. Ultimately, I guess they just decided it's like, you know, if we're going to roster 3 guys in the first round, you know, 3 rookies is a lot. And, you know, if we're going to keep all 3 picks, you know, I think it doesn't probably make sense to roster a 4th guy. So either you're thinking about stashing a guy at that spot, or, you know, you can get another pick. And, you know, I don't think it was a bad decision. I think, you know, at some point you can afford to be patient and, Again, three rookies is more than enough to sort of get the thing moving. So I can understand why they did that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, looking around the landscape, there wasn't a super obvious stash guy that was, you know, quote, worthy of that pick. I guess a couple of guys went reasonably soon after that. But was there anybody that you would have advocated for as a stash that early in the second round?
One guy who I really liked was Isu Fanon, who went to the Wizards at 44. Again, you know, he's a guy. I mean, if you look at the international players who sort of followed, I mean, there was Isai Bonga at 39, I believe. Rodion Skoruks went 40. I mean, you know, those are all, I think, guys who they probably could have, you know, drafted and kept overseas if they wanted to. But, you know, I wouldn't like this was not an especially strong international class up and down. And I think being in a position like they're in, you know, being able to spin it forward and get some more value out of it is fine.
Yeah, for sure. And it looks, I mean, they talked, Travis Schley talked after the draft a lot about how they wanted assets in the future. And even if they're, you know, if they're just second round picks, they're definitely assets for the future. So we could sort of leave that there. I wanted to ask you about Amari Spellman. That was, I guess, the most surprising pick that they made throughout the night. I didn't really see many people mocking him in that range. So I guess it raised some eyebrows. What do you think of his fit in the modern NBA, knowing that he's obviously a shooter, which is something the Hawks were looking for, but has some question marks elsewhere?
Almost one, really. I thought it was kind of an inspired pick. You know, from the start of the year, it's interesting. He kind of snuck up. You know, I'd seen him in high school, and, you know, he redshirted the first year at Villanova, and, you know, I thought he could be a guy that would have a chance to really, you know, help himself and maybe come out this year. Would I have guessed that he would be drafted before Jalen Brunson? I would not have guessed that. But at the same time, I can see the appeal there. You know, number 30 is the cheapest first round pick anyway. But I think Spellman is a really, really smart player. And I think part of why he flew under the radar is he doesn't have the obvious, like, you know, he's actually more athletic than you think, but it, you know, staying in shape has been a thing for him throughout his career. They're going to have to stay on him to do that. But I think because he's not like a crazy eye test guy, and because, you know, Villanova obviously was a stacked roster this year, you know, your eye isn't necessarily traveling to Amari when you're watching them. So, you know, from the NBA perspective, it's a little bit different. I think teams really like the rebounding, passing, the communication aspect. You know, I thought he was pretty good at the combine. He's a guy you really kind of got to focus on to notice what he's doing. But I think he's a guy who, you know, does bring a lot to the table. So I liked that move for them at 30, you know, knowing that you need a big and, you know, getting a guy you just sort of are buying in on his IQ and skill level. I think it's an interesting choice for sure.
Yeah, that was definitely a theme of the intro press conference earlier today, just the fact that he played in that system at Villanova that's about as close to a modern system as you can get at the college level, and the basketball IQ stuff and the shooting is an obvious appeal. What do you make of him defensively? I know he has a little bit longer wingspan than you might guess, and as you mentioned, he's probably a better athlete than you might think, but that's been the question that I have, I think, above the rest of the questions, is just what he can be defensively. And I know I talked to Sam Mussini of The Athletic. He seems to not be super high on his defensive projection, but I guess it's probably a sort of a split. So where are you on that divide of what he's always going to look like defensively in the NBA?
I think it'll be a problem on some level. I don't think you're drafting him expecting him to be a defensive plus, right? You're drafting him hoping that, you know, he gives you enough that it doesn't matter. I think you can look at sort of, if you think about like late career Boris Diaw and sort of the way that he became extremely valuable to San Antonio, I think that if you're going to point to like a role comparison, like that could be interesting. You know, he sort of is the same kind of like big body, sort of long, can do, you know, clearly has a game. But it's just, you know, you have to be able to sort of look beyond the defensive stuff. I mean, you know, one, you know, they really are going to have to make sure he's in shape. And, you know, two, there's always going to be the risk where if another team decides to spread it out and, you know, you put him in ball screen situations where he becomes a liability. But, you know, I think he is a smart player. It won't be like he's not trying defensively.
Right.
And sometimes having that effort and just understanding the rest of the floor matters. So, like, it's, I don't think it's like a total black hole on that end. But yeah, you know, it's just going to depend on who's around him. He's probably going to have to defend just because so many more powerful forwards are mobile nowadays.
Yeah, that's my big question. But as you mentioned, he is smart, and there's some reason to believe that he can stick in that way. We can move on to Kevin Herter, who is, of course, been in the news a lot because of all the reporting about Travis Schlenk potentially trading up and then not trading up, and there was the promise stuff with him. But he was certainly a guy that was mocked a lot to the Hawks. It's not a huge surprise that he went there as the injury now as well. What did you make of that pick? Would you worry about the injury at all? That's a question I've been getting, and I keep saying no, but maybe you have a different answer. But what did you make of that Kevin Herter selection?
I think that's appropriate value for him. I think people knew he was going to go in that range. The promise was from the Lakers at 25, based on what I was told. But, you know, they knew they were going to be able to come up and get him. And I think for Atlanta, knowing that if you're taking Trey, you know, you're going to need shooters around him. You know, I think Herter is one of the best shooters in the draft. So, you know, the injury is not an issue. Like, he was playing with it at the combine. He's been working out with it the whole last couple months. So shutting it down just made sense at that point. It's like, you know, you have some type of personal security. There's nothing else to prove. So I wouldn't get too worried about that. I think it'll be fine. But, you know, with him, you know, the offensive talent level is there. I think he can do a little bit more than what we saw at Maryland. You know, that team sort of was restrictive in some ways for the talent in terms of just the way they were playing. But my big question with Herter is, again, it's also defense. You know, he's athletic, but not like a, you know, top-tier athlete. You know, he can move, but he's going to have to really, really make sure you know, to work on the defensive angle, you know, to be tougher defensively. I don't know what he's going to give you on that end yet against, you know, NBA guys in and out. I think he's, you know, a good bet to give you some type of value, but I also think, you know, defensively it could pose an issue long-term, just knowing that, again, like when you're talking about we're going to build around Trey, it's like, you know, you need to have guys who can sort of cover for him defensively. And I don't know if Herter is that. So I'm curious to see how those parts fit.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I sort of was just saying in the moment when it was happening. Like, I, you know, once you go with Young, who we'll talk about here in a second, Herter doesn't seem like the perfect partner for Young in a lot of ways because of the defensive stuff. But if you want to just have all this spread out and shooting and space, and they praised his IQ a lot and his what I think is probably an underrated ability to create off the dribble just a little bit, you know, attack closeouts, that kind of stuff. I think he's not just a pure shooter. Obviously, he's a very good shooter. That's his principal appeal. But a guy that you isn't a pure specialist, at least in my opinion. Do you see him being able to at least, you know, reasonably attack closeouts and just kind of do a little bit more than just be a stencil shooter? Because obviously, you know, locally, the easy comp is Kyle Korver, not one that I would necessarily make, but people sort of see him there. I think he's definitely more of a guy who can create a little bit more off the dribble.
Oh, totally. Herter has that game for sure. You know, he can get into the paint a little bit. He's skilled. He's not a stiff. I mean, yeah, Korver is a very easy comparison because they're white guys who shoot.
yes, exactly.
I think Herter, but you know, it's not the same player. But I think, you know, he'll be able to do some of that. You know, I think you're hoping he's, you know, probably your fourth or fifth best player. If he's one of your three best players, I don't know, you know, what your team's going to look like necessarily, but he definitely has the potential to, you know, become a very consistent three-point shooter. I don't doubt that he'll be able to do that. It's just, you know, what else, will he be giving you enough to stay on the floor elsewhere? And that's what I think that's what they're gambling on.
Yeah. Last thing on him. Do you think he's like an elite level shooter? I guess that's the question that people have had. Is like, everyone knows he can shoot, and that's his biggest appeal. But how good of a shooter is he? If that makes sense. Like, is he the best shooter in this class? Is he one of the best shooters in this class? Like, what do you see him actually becoming as a pure knockdown guy?
Yeah, I think he can be. You know, it wasn't just. I mean, obviously he shot it great at the combine, but it wasn't just the combine. You know, being able to watch him, you know, over the course of the season. You know, he's a guy who I kind of had my eye on early, but just like wasn't sure where to peg. Didn't know if he'd be coming out right away. But like, you know, I believe in his shot, and he can hit. You know, one thing I look for when we're trying to decide how good of a shooter is someone is, you know, are they going to hit the off balance shots, you know, off the catch, you know, when your base is off balance, you know, are you going to, you know, do your mechanics hold? Can you hit those tough shots? And I think he can. And I think that's an essential aspect of, you know, anytime we're talking about a guy whose primary NBA skill is, you know, being a shooting threat. You know, how good is he at that? And I think Kevin has that, which is like, I think definitely some reason for optimism in terms of how good of a shooter he can be, you know, continuing to work on that, you know, being able to hit those tough shots is a sign of having consistent mechanics and a stable base as well. So, you know, I'm very curious to see how he'll look. I don't necessarily think he'll be an overnight sensation, but I think you'll see him, you know, become a solid rotation guy.
Yep, and the shooting is, of course, as valuable as it's ever been in the league. Before we get into a little bit of Trae Young talk specifically, what'd you make of the trade? Obviously, that's been the part that almost as much as Trae Young even individually has been litigated now, because they had the chance at Luka. There's all the reporting, and I would say conflicting reporting about, you know, who wanted what and all that fun stuff. But what'd you make of the trade from the Hawks' angle, knowing that they actually get the extra first-round pick as well?
No, I liked it. I mean, you know, passing on Doncic is something you're either going to agree with or not agree with, and that's going to determine how you view the trade. But just in terms of like a pure decision for spinning the rebuild forward, I mean, you know, obviously there was an internal push for Trae all along. You know, I don't know specifically who wanted what, but from what I understand of the situation, you know, there was, you know, a lot of strong internal interest in him, but the, you know, again, the thing was that they would only take him if they were able to move off of that pick. So, I mean, to me, I always thought that Atlanta and Dallas were sort of natural trade partners, just knowing that Dallas wanted Luka, knowing that I think to get Trae, to know you were seriously going to get him, you'd want to be in front of Orlando. You know, Orlando never really tipped their hand to what they were going to do. But I think you wanted to get in front of them to be sure. So, you know, getting that pick, which I think will be a valuable first round pick, I think is an important part of the trade. People are, you know, the easy thing to do is point to, oh, we could have taken Luka, but we didn't. But I think you have to have the long view if you're Atlanta, just continuing to, you know, acquire the assets and sort of keep spinning it forward, I think is valuable. This is not going to happen overnight, and they still have to, you know, make some trades and get off of these other contracts if they can. You know, this is not what this team's going to look like yet in 3 years, right? So,
yeah,
I think they got pretty good value for it. Maybe they took on a little bit of risk, but again, I think if Trae is the guy who they really wanted, being able to get another, you know, probably a lottery pick out of it is pretty strong value to go down two spots.
Yeah, that's something I've said too. Like if they really evaluated Trae and Luka as pretty close, or even Trae ahead, depending on who you listen to, then the deal makes a ton of sense, obviously, because you want to get another lottery pick for a guy that you think is close to the guy you could take. That makes a ton of sense. It just kind of, as you mentioned, comes down to the evaluation. How big of a gap did you have between Luka and Trae? I know that's like sort of impossible to answer, but like, you know, big board wise, you know, fit wise, a lot of stuff. What was the difference there between those two guys for you?
I mean, I had Luka, I think at number two. I think he was number two for me. I was kind of back and forth between Luka and Jaren Jackson as far as who was the second best prospect. For me, it was always DeAndre at number one. Trae, for me, was just somewhere kind of moved around a bit, but it was like, I think 7, 8, 9 range in terms of how I ranked it on our site. I can't remember what it was at the end. But I did have him ahead of the other 2 point guards in the draft, ahead of Sexton and ahead of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You know, I mean, that only matters so much, and so much of it is dependent on fit. And I think
right.
The good news for the fit in Atlanta is that, you know, clearly the Hawks have time to sort of let him make mistakes. You know, anytime you are trying to cultivate a young guy into, you know, becoming an NBA level playmaker in terms of reads, you know, there's going to be growing pains. It doesn't matter how good the kid is. So, you know, from day one, I don't know what he's going to do. He may struggle because defenses are going to be able to really key on him to start. But it's going to be about the long term, and it's going to have to require patience. But he is a really exciting player. And, you know, I think there are some people who are crying, oh, he's going to be a bust, just sort of based on very easy conclusions to draw. But I think the fact that he has two elite skills, you know, shooting and playmaking, I think gives him at least some level of value that I think will translate. So I'm not as fearful, I think, as, you know, some people might be. I don't know if he becomes a star, but I think that there's enough there that it's worth a dice roll if you can afford it and have the need. So
Yeah, it sounds like we're pretty similar. I had Trey in the same range and Luka sort of in the same range, and it's a gamble, but I do think having the passing does really help. So I was going to ask you about his offensive game. We kind of touched on it there a little bit, but you know, the shooting is what everybody always talks about, and that's an obvious appeal, his range, all that fun stuff. But the passing, I think, is what sort of sells me on it more. I think, you know, aside from maybe Luka, he might have been the best passer in the class, which people I don't think necessarily notice. I mean, they see the assist numbers, but just the actual, you know, feel and vision and all that stuff, that's really important. So what's sort of your baseline expectation for him offensively, knowing that's sort of impossible, especially as a rookie? It's very different than what he actually can be. But what do you see his reasonable expectation as, and also, like, I guess sort of a reasonable ceiling outcome? Because I think that's also something people really disagree on, because you hear the Curry comps and all that fun stuff, but what can he actually become?
Yeah, I think if you look at one comparison that I kind of have pointed to in the past, not in terms of direct skill set, but in terms of sort of how we view this guy relative to the other point guards in the league, is I think he could end up in like some Mike Conley tier of point guards, which is a very valuable player. You know, maybe not a top five point guard, but I mean, I think most people would put Conley in the next group in terms of what we're talking about guards in the NBA right now. You know, I don't have a list in front of me, but you know, if he can be, you know, in that upper echelon of point guards, you know, top half, top third of the league, I think that's a pretty, I think that would, that's probably his ceiling if everything goes well, where, you know, you get the right team around him, you cover for him on defense, and then he becomes a guy who can get you, really kind of engineer the offense and get you the assists and, you know, hit the open threes. And I think that's a fairly reasonable, if we're talking about ceiling, that's what I'd prone it. You know, floor to me is he's running your second unit. You know, I don't think he will wash out to the point where he's not useful. But again, it really is just going to depend on, you know, how good of an environment I think they can put there for him to learn. And but I don't question the talent.
Yeah, he's very, very talented. And if they get a contribution on the level of Conley at number five overall, that's a very, very good value as well. It'd be a very nice player to have. You know, I wanted to ask you about the defense a little bit. Obviously, that's the point where everyone acknowledges, including the Hawks and even Trey, that's sort of the weak spot of his game right now. What do you think he can become defensively, knowing that he is so small, but seems to be willing to work on that? I mean, he's saying all the right things, but at the end of the day, the measurables kind of are what they are, and he wasn't necessarily great defensively at the college level. So basically the question is, how bad is it in your opinion?
With defenders, to some extent, I just think that, you know, you can kind of tell early on. You know, I don't expect him to be a above average defender ever. I think it's more likely that he is a below average defender for his whole career, just based on, again, the physical limitations relative to the rest of the NBA. It's tough. But again, we've seen guys like that who, if they're good enough offensively and contributions sort of outweigh what you're giving up, it's fine. And, you know, I think I try to still at least compete on that side of the ball. But again, this is the point that I've made before. I think at least when you're a team like Atlanta and you're drafting him and your cupboard's kind of bare, at least you have the advantage of now, when you are building forward for the next three or four seasons, you know, knowing that he's your guy and knowing that you want to figure out what to put around him, I think is going to be advantageous. It's not like you already have three pieces in place and you're trying to like awkwardly squeeze him in. Like, no, it's like now he's your piece. You're hoping he's your piece and you can kind of work with that, right? So I think John Collins is going to be a nice fit. Like, I think Collins will be a good, you know, pick and roll guy for him who can finish. I think he'll benefit. And again, like, Herter is a good pick because he can shoot. Spellman, you know, might be able to space the floor and be good in sort of ball screen situations and sort of a secondary playmaker. So I think at least you can tell, just looking at their draft, like, the through line is this idea. It's, you know, hey, we're going to, you know, try to be really skilled. We're going to try to really move the ball. And that's how we want to sort of play down the line, right? I think that's the commonality with those three guys.
Makes complete sense. Last thing before I ask you about the 2019 draft real quick, you and your colleague Jake Fisher, who I know well, reported a lot about Kent Bazemore being available, Dennis Schroeder being available during the draft, and now with Trey on board, there's been a ton of focus on Schroeder in particular, because obviously the long term, having both those guys doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I know you don't necessarily have anything to report on the podcast, but how big of an issue is it going to be for the Hawks, in your opinion, to go ahead and try to get off of Dennis right now? Because, you know, everybody's kind of saying the same thing, that the interest level just isn't really there on the league right now.
Yeah, I 100% buy it. There's not much interest right now. I mean, that sort of vibes is what I'd heard. I mean, you know, I reported that he's been made available, which is true. But it's just, you know, with Schroeder, A, the fact that he's, you know, owed $15 million for three more seasons. That's, no matter who you are, that's tough to sort of take on if you're not a star. Just based on the environment the league is in right now, you know, teams want to preserve flexibility, in free agency, with another round of contracts coming up this year and next year with, you know, a lot of top guys. So, it's going to be hard to move off of him. And I think that now that you draft Trey, I think you probably are acknowledging that what you can get for him in trade is going to be even less, because you really don't have leverage, right? I mean, teams know that he's your dead weight now. You know, they know that Trey's your guy. Maybe they'll experiment playing them together, you know, if Schroeder is still in the Hawks in the fall. I think Bazemore was probably the guy that would have been, they might have been able to get off of in the Dallas deal, but I think ultimately Dallas had enough leverage to not take that money. And they gave him the first instead. But, you know, I mean, if they have to, it's not the end of the world if they're still paying those guys, you know, in a year. It's not like the Hawks are in a hurry to, you know, make the playoffs. But I think it should, especially with Schroeder, I think it'll be probably difficult to get other people to take that on, unless you're, you know, selling at a bare minimum level of expense.
Yeah, which they might be willing to do. I mean, I'm not sure they are necessarily just yet, but.
At this point, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. And I do think head coach Lloyd Pierce said, I guess on Monday reportedly, that he sees those guys being able to play together a little bit. Travis Lang said the same thing. Some of that's probably lip service, because they have to say that because they have no leverage. But I think that'll be interesting to watch if they try to play Young and Schroeder together. But I, my whole thing is that you have to give Young the opportunities that he needs, and that would be the number one priority for me. So if that means, you know, playing Schroeder less or doing something weird if he's still on the roster, you kind of have to do that, because you know the priority at this point is going to be Young and not Schroeder. Even if I think it's pretty reasonable to expect Schroeder to be a better basketball player next season than Trae Young. I don't necessarily love Schroeder, but I think, you know, right now today he's probably better than Trey. But that doesn't mean you still have to go through Trey. That's kind of the guy moving forward, so you have to invest in him for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing to note is both of them, they're rep by the same agency, which kind of creates an interesting situation. I don't know if, you know, I'm sure the agency would like Schroeder to get out of there. I think everybody would like Schroeder to get out of there at this point. Like, I think there's probably some synergy in terms of let's find him a new team. So the question would just be, you know, who is that going to be, and what the Hawks have to eat in order to make that deal. So that'll be interesting to see if they can get off of him in the next, you know, 6 weeks.
It's time to get the Orlando Magic on the phone, I think. Not the only team in the league right now that has, like, the absolute definitive point guard need right now is Orlando. So, anyway, there's plenty to talk about there. All right, before I let you get out of here, the 2019 draft is a long way away. You mentioned earlier you're working on some stuff for that now, but Hawks fans are already getting excited about the prospects of another top five pick of their own, and, of course, now they have this Dallas pick. So I know it's way too early to talk about this, but who is a guy or two that you think will probably be at the top of the draft the Hawks might want to get their hands on?
Right now, it looks like that here at the top is sort of wing heavy, which is probably good news for Atlanta at this point. I mean, you know, RJ Barrett, I think, is probably the person who generally we are going to view as the favorite for the number one pick right now. It's very early. I think it's more in the sense that nobody has really stepped up to take that from him. But he's a very good player. Cameron Reddish from Duke is going to be his teammate, who also I think has a chance to go number one. I think that, you know, Reddish has all the talent to do it. It's just with him, it's a matter of want, where he not consistently displayed to, you know, NBA teams in any setting that he is, really a dominant in terms of mindset type guy. You know, he can be passive, and now that's a big factor when you're picking at the top of the draft. I think both those guys will be top five picks. I think Sekou Doumbouya from France is a guy who I really like. I got to see him at Basketball Without Borders camp in February. And he is a guy who is sort of trending towards the top of the draft as well. An interesting guy to watch, depending on what type of pro season he has in France. It was just announced that he has moved up to a bigger club. So that'll be interesting. And then Nasir Little from North Carolina, the fourth sort of wing guy who sort of near the top of people's boards, including mine, who is, very athletic, kind of a slasher, can sort of defend, kind of rangy. I've gotten to see all these guys in the last few months again. So I think those are probably guys at the top of the draft to look at. This is obviously super fluid.
Yes.
going through this is always just like, maybe this guy might be a guy we want to talk about in a while, a few months. So, but I think the general feeling that is that this is not as strong of a draft as the last couple of years. I think 17 obviously turned out very well. I think 18, a lot of the guys who were taken in the top 20 of this year's draft, I think have a chance to become, pretty good players. But next year, and again, it's early, but there's not as much guys you can look at and be like, no, that's a guy who I think is a pretty quality prospect. So, I don't like to jump to conclusions too far ahead. And, the whole thing is always uncertain and it's going to keep changing. But, I think Atlanta, if they are picking in the top five or six picks, at least they'll be able to get somebody they can use. So,
that's what it's about. I know it's obscenely early, not fair at all to ask you about that, but I know you're already working on it, so you had a few names at least at the top of your head.
Worries. I've mastered the art of not giving take.
People are already asking me, and I'm like, guys, I've probably seen like four of these guys play total, and that was very, very little. Yeah. So I'm not close to being ready. You're far more ready than I am, but nobody's ready right now. We're still a year away, so. At any rate, I had to ask. Thank you, Jeremy, man. I really appreciate you joining me. Please plug anything that you would like. I think people are hopefully already reading your stuff and following you, but tell them where they can if they are not already.
I'm just on Twitter at Jeremy Wu, my name. We'll have some Jeff stuff for next year sort of on SI. I'll be at Summer League. So we'll have some more, a lot of good content coming out for the offseason. So check it out.
Follow Jeremy. He does great work. And again, man, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Of course, anytime, man.